Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/theopenmicpodcast and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening today. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/theopenmicpodcast.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome on into the Open Mic Podcast. We are on episode number 44. It is good to be here. The music's popping and the mic is hot, and we have another great episode lined up for you today. Man, what a beautiful day it was in the Bay. So here's the deal. We had like a stretch of 3 days where it was nice and cool, right? It's like 70 degrees outside and I was like totally feeling it. I was cool with it. I'm like, this makes me happy. And then all of a sudden, wham bam, we're like back in the 90s again. I don't get it. It's crazy. We haven't had any rain, which is another struggle we've been having. And so, you know, we've got fires everywhere, which is really unfortunate. And then the heat, and then you add the smoke on top of it, and it just makes it really unbearable. And for those of us who struggle with allergies, it's even more frustrating because I find myself sniffing all of the time. I know it sounds insane and it's totally crazy, but I guess that's just the way it is. You know, that's my lot in life, as they say, but I'm cool with it. It could be a lot worse. I'm just thankful and happy to be here with you tonight on the podcast. So we always talk to interesting people here on the show, and our elevator pitch is this, that no subject, no topic is off limits. And I like to explain this every once in a while so people who are just brand new tuning into the program are like, what is he talking about? So here's the deal. So the idea is an open mic. When you go to an open mic, there's a lot of things happening. There could be comedy, there could be poetry, there could be music, there could be spoken word. You know, it just depends. There's just a lot of different things. And so when I put the podcast together, I came up with this idea of welcome to the open mic, where you could just have anything happen. And that's really what the show is all about. And so, again, if this is your first time listening, thank you so much for jumping in and being a part of the show. Oh, yeah. Boom. So, yeah, if you want to go on over to Apple Podcasts, that would be absolutely fantastic. And just leave us a rating and a review. It really does help. It keeps us discoverable in the iTunes library, but also just does a whole lot for the show. And so we really appreciate it. It's super, super important. You know, I've been listening to audiobooks lately. I just wrapped up a great audiobook called Crushing It with Gary Vaynerchuk. It's a great book for people who are entrepreneurs, but you might have a book that you like to read yourself. It just depends. I love audiobooks for many, many different reasons, and it's because it just makes it easy for me. I'm all about simplicity, if you know what I'm saying. Now, I used to read books a lot, but because I'm on the go now and I have my son and just things are happening all the time and I'm commuting to work, I like to listen to audiobooks, and audible.com is super cool for that very reason, because you can have access to literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of books at your fingertips. And one thing that I love about Audible, well, one of many things, is that you can listen to books at like a higher pace than you would reading it. So like right now, it would be like 1.5, 2.5 speed on an audiobook, which is conversational speed is what they call it. And so there's that. And so what may take you several hours or several days to read a regular book, you can listen to an audiobook in like 8 hours. It's super awesome. If you're really motivated, you can do it in less time than that. But Audible has hooked us up over here at the Open Mic Podcast with something really, really cool. And I'm very passionate about it. If you go to www.audibletrial.com/theopenmicpodcast, you can get 30 days free of Audible, which is awesome. It's like $14 a month. And you get one free audiobook on top of it. That's really cool. Audiobooks can range anywhere from $5 to $25. It just depends. But over here at the Open Mic, we want to hook up our listeners. And so if you go to the website, www.audibletrial.com/theopenmicpodcast, you can get hooked up with a service and give it a try free for 30 days. And really, the cool thing about that is this. If you do that, it helps support the podcast as well. Because doing a podcast, it costs money to keep the lights on. There's studio upgrades. There's equipment upgrades. There's just a lot of different things. A lot of There is a lot of different things. And every little bit helps, which is super cool. And we appreciate your support. So today we have a very special guest, and we will play this interview for you here in just a moment. I sat down with Ghanaian film director M. Saibu, who is one of the first, I believe, if not the first, to have a Ghanaian film channel on Amazon Prime. That's a huge deal, and he has written and directed several films, and we had a very interesting conversation. He and I share something in common, and you have to listen to the podcast to get that part. So anyway, M. Saibu is a great guy. We'll put all his social contacts and links in the show notes. So if you want to get in touch with him, you can. And you can find out his Amazon Prime channel as well. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick pause. And we will get to that interview in just a moment. What's up, everybody? It's Brett Allen from the Open Mic Podcast. And first of all, I want to say thank you so much for listening and being a part of the show. The fact that you listen, that you download, and that you subscribe every single day blows my mind. And from the very bottom of my heart, I want to extend a thank you. Now, Anchor.fm, the company that supports the podcast and that hosts it, has offered a brand new way for you to support my show, the Open Mic Podcast. You can now sponsor the program monthly. There are three ways that you can do this. There are three levels: 99 cents per month, $4.99 per month, and $9.99 per month. And the cool thing is you don't even have to have the Anchor app to do it. Wherever you listen to this show, there is a link that you can go to, and it will take you to the anchor.fm/theopenmicpodcast homepage. From there, you can pick whatever level you want to support the show. It's that simple. And the cool thing is you can either do it once or you can do it reoccurring. It's totally up to you. The other thing about this that is super cool is that it's tax deductible as well. Doing a podcast can be expensive, and there are things that come up, like new equipment, new studio upgrades, new microphones, new music. All of that cost money. And I would absolutely love to partner with you on the podcast. Just head over to www.anchor.fm/theopenmicpodcast. Click the link. It's that simple. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. Cheers and be well. Well, my guest today is very exciting. His name is M. Saibu. He is a Ghanaian American writer-director. He has directed two short films, The Line of Work and The Shortcut, as well as the 2017 feature film, The Northern King, followed by a 2018 release, Slumber Party Massacre. He has also created Simbrin Entertainment Group in 2016 to champion his dream of creating a hub for creative minds and talents in the Ghanaian movie space. I'm really excited to talk with him this morning. I love talking about a lot of different things on the podcast. We cover a lot of subjects and a lot of topics. And this one is definitely going to be fantastic, just like all of them. Please welcome to the podcast, M. Saibu. Appreciate you being here.
No, thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited to be on.
Perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background. And why don't you tell us and tell our listeners where you're from and what prompted you to get into the film industry?
I'm originally from Ghana, as you mentioned already. So, but growing up over there, I always wanted to kind of, I started writing at a very young age, and my dad kind of encouraged me and stuff like that. So originally I was kind of, my plan was to be a writer. And then somewhere in there, I wanted to be a teacher, and I just kind of let it go. And then I joined the Air Force at some point. And right when I was, this was in 2012 when I joined the Air Force. So when I was coming out 3.5 years later, I was like, you know, I started really thinking seriously about, hey, I needed to take this thing seriously, you know, because I had done a lot of things within that time that had to do with film and stuff like that, just, you know, and I'd gotten back into it a lot more, and I was watching a lot more things that had to do with film, you know. There's this show I used to watch a lot, you know, with this guy on it called John Campia. I don't know if you've heard of him. But, like, he does movie reviews, talks about movies and these kinds of things. And he has a crew and all this. So I used to watch them and just kind of get pointers. They'll talk about movies, some of the mistakes that were in them, these kinds of things. And I just kind of take it in. And because of that, I decided to also be doing, like, master classes and workshops and stuff like that. And that is what led to my first short film in, like, 2016. Because I was just watching this stuff, and I was like, yo, you know, you're not going to, you could always keep saying you want to be a filmmaker at some point, but you don't become a filmmaker until you start becoming one. So you have to start somewhere. And that's kind of how I got into that, basically. That's kind of the beginning of it, so to speak.
I like that. Now, you and I share something in common. I was in the Air Force as well. I went in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I went in 1996, and I got out in 2001. What did you do in the military?
I was services, actually. You probably know what that is.
Yeah, I do.
I was, yeah. Yeah, I was services, and I loved the job, actually. I really loved services.
That was like the one dream job, yes, that everybody wanted in the military, because you got to do,
yeah, man,
so many different things. And
yeah, and when you came out, you got a lot more opportunities.
Yeah. Now, I was security police, so the job opportunities.
Oh, security forces. Wow.
Yeah. So that's very cool. Mm-hmm. So what experiences did you have in the Air Force in regards to film? Did you do any type of work for, like, Air Force Network or anything like that? Or you just kind of were bit by the bug by films and that was it for you?
Yeah, I did. When I was at Beale Air Force Base, we did have I did a few kind of like docu-series type things. You know, one of them was for basically we had something called the dorm something. I forgot what we used to call it. It was basically like this little union type,
sure,
thing. I forgot what the name is that we call it. But basically for dorm students, sometimes we'd throw events and stuff. So like we'd have like a president and all that kind of stuff. So they kind of, the executives or the leadership for that kind of came together, and we all did this this introductory video, which I basically wrote, directed, and edited everything about it. Kind of like a 10-minute documentary telling new airmen, you know, you're welcome to Beale. This is, you know, mm-hmm, what we do. This is what we have here for airmen, all these kinds of things. And that is kind of where, like, you know, and I deployed at some point too, but I'm not going to get into that too much. But like while I was deployed, all I did was basically kind of, after I had done that, I was kind of, the bug had come back.
Okay.
You know, so all I did was basically be watching like stuff about movies and stuff. And I was already priming my mind that, okay, I think that once I get out, I'm going to take this thing seriously.
Now, I want to talk about your childhood. Were you born and raised in America, or were you born and raised in Ghana, and then your parents made the move over to the United States?
Yeah, I was born in Ghana.
Okay.
And basically, you know, like I was raised there for the most part, did some high school there. But my family moved to Germany in 2009. You know, and basically No, actually not in 2009. My family moved a few years earlier. I moved there in 2009 to join them. And once I joined them, you know, we're living on post in Germany and stuff. And I just kind of got very, I fell in love with that, with the military lifestyle and kind of just kind of the order and all that kind of stuff, which is why I eventually joined.
So now you're in the United States, you're in the military. What was your first experience with filmmaking? Did you just start creating projects and writing right away? Or did you do work on other films in your time, like in local productions, or you just jumped right in feet first?
No, I did help a few friends of mine. There was this staff sergeant who was already doing films while she was in the Air Force. And she already had, her friends had, production company and stuff like that. So I'll just, you know, I'll go help them out every now and then around, you know, this was in Sacramento area. Okay. You know, so I was just kind of hang around with them. And when I decided I was going to start doing film, you know, I connected with her and she would take me on the set, you know, whenever they had something going on. And they used to have a lot of different projects going on. There was even a point where I was an extra and I was acting sometimes. So, you know, it was just some fun stuff. But I always had my goal of actually becoming an actual filmmaker, not to be in them.
So where do you come up with your ideas when you're putting a script together? What is your inspiration?
It depends. A lot of it, I would say, is of course, a lot of experiences you put in your work, they have to come from real life and real people that you know and stuff like that. But for the most part, also, I say that I always tell people that I do things that I want to see. So if I'm in Ghana, for example, I always wanted to see, when I was a kid, there was a film called, Police Academy.
Which, oh yeah.
Was I liked them. It was very funny and stuff like that. You know, it's one of those movies. And I was when are we going to have a movie like that? I want to make a movie like that one day, you know? And then with, what's the name of it? When I did my first short film, it was kind of the same thing. I was like, well, I'd like to see a small short about an assassin who is sent to kill someone, but then when they get over there, that person reminds them of their past or something. How does that go? That would be interesting. So I did that. And in one weekend, I wrote the concept on a Friday, got my friends together on a Saturday, and then edited throughout Saturday night. And then Sunday morning, around 10 or something, we had the short ready. And after that, it just kind of kept going. Other things kept coming up. And then the ideas started getting bigger. And that's kind of what led to feature.
Well, let's talk about your film, The Northern King. I actually had the opportunity to watch it. And it's an excellent film. Very, very good.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was wonderful. So why don't you tell us, for the listeners who aren't familiar, a little bit about what the story is about? And is there any truth to the film as far as the story, you know, between the two friends? I'm very curious about that.
Yeah, that is actually, you know what? There is some truth to it, because a lot of it had to do with, it's drawn from my own life. Amin is a very, the main character is very, he's an exaggerated version of myself, you know, coming back from the States and seeing that a lot of my friends had gotten into weird things, you know. And I was thinking, you know, but what if I had come back and one of my close, because I did meet a friend of mine who, you know, he had gone down a road that I wasn't too happy with, right? And I was looking at this would be a dilemma if, I don't want him doing that. So, if I was the one who was supposed to bring him in, that would cause a lot of, that would be a serious thing to have to deal with, you know. And that was kind of how that started. And I started writing it. And it just basically came down to what happens when, you know, opportunities. For Africans, that's really what it is. It's almost as if, based on what opportunity you get, that depends on how you turn out. But ultimately, everyone is just trying to survive. You know, so it's they know each other. That's his brother. That's someone he feels that's someone when we're kids, we're tight, all this kind of you know, all these things. But like now you're adults and everybody kind of has to do what they have to do. And that's kind of why I don't want to spoil it, but like you get how it ends, because like this is Africa. Like a lot of the times your good intentions and your well-meaning heart is not going to get you very far.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's kind of the thing that it was a theme of it. And the theme of not being caught, like, you know, he's a very rash hero or a protagonist in a way where he's not doing his homework. He's not learning, you know, he's not taking the time to figure things out. And because of that, you can get outsmarted if you kind of like go with anger instead. You just kind of go without really thinking. You're not listening to your partner. You're just going to take everything on your own hands and you want to do it on your own. Most of the time, it doesn't work out. I mean, you know, when we watch Western films, that always works out. You know, like when someone decides, you know, when someone is like, hey, man, I'm going to go kill everybody. You're like, all right, you know, it works out. But with, you know, in real life, it's not like that sometimes. Sometimes it works out, but for the most part, it's like, in reality, it's a numbers game, I suppose.
Now, are you the type of director that is very hands-on with your actors and actresses, or are you the type of director who lets them learn their lines, you give them basic blocking, and then just let them go for it?
It depends. I do encourage a lot of making it your own, but I also have a very specific thing that I'm looking for sometimes. So they're specific. There are several times where we don't agree, like maybe like what they're doing for me, it's not what I'm looking for. So I'll be like, hey, that's when I have to like put my foot down. It's okay, I get what you're doing is awesome and all the kind of stuff, but this is specifically what I see in my head. So let's go for that. But besides that, I'm very open. And I actually encourage them to personalize it, because I feel like when you personalize a role, you're able to give out a better performance.
Sure.
Like I tell them, hey, you know, like if you're thinking about this person, stop thinking about the person as an aside person, like a foreign person you're trying to imitate. Think about the person as you, only you're in this situation. How would you react in this situation? Like realistically, how would you react? Because, you know, like as human beings, we're very different. And if you try to let everybody react the same way when they're annoyed, angry, whatever emotion, that's when you start getting to the fake next level. But if you just tell the person, how would you feel? Like, how do you feel when you're angry? How do you behave when you're angry or when you get angry about something? And depending on the level of it, you know, you kind of just let them channel their own spirit into the character. And I think that makes the character a little more authentic, because a lot of their responses and stuff are real.
And you can definitely tell that when you're watching it. That's why I asked that question, because I feel like that you gave them a level of direction of a vision that you had, because I feel like it was very clear. But you also allowed them to make certain choices as an actor to own it. So there's a healthy balance. Like sometimes I feel like you can watch certain films, and it was not the case for you, but you can definitely feel that the director was heavy-handed as far as what he wanted his actors to do. But in this particular instance, I feel like that you gave them just enough to get them to the ledge, and then they were able to take it from there. Because I think when you're dealing with a story like this that is very personal, you clearly have a concept in your head of what you want. So there's not like this ability to just have all of this artistic freedom and go for it, because you are like, hey, you know, this is my story and this is kind of what I want. And as a director, I think that's okay, as long as you're continuing to maintain that relationship with your actors, where you go, this in this particular scene, this is what I want. But outside of that, feel free to do whatever and make it your own.
That's exactly me. Like, I'm like, hey, man, look, you can have fun with it, but there are specific things that I'm going to need. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, like exactly what you said. It's just exactly what I need. But beyond that, you can do something. And a lot of the times there's actually some things they do that become very cool to me that I didn't even think about. You know, if you watched it, especially the guy that played the Northern King, Henry, he was just such a phenomenal dude. Like, he would after we're done doing something, he'd be like, okay, so I wanted to try it this other way. And then he would do it. And I'd be like, wow, okay, I like that. And then sometimes I end up using his take, like how he did it instead of mine, because as a director, you still have to be very open to that possibility that, hey, you got to remember, you don't know everything and you cannot be the only person, like you're not the person who's going to come up with all the stuff you're going to love about the thing. You know, mm-hmm. some you got to accept when someone comes up with something that you feel actually enhances what you're trying to do. Because sometimes you can get into this ego thing of, I've met a few directors and stuff, like when they're like, hey, you know, I don't like when actors pop up trying to change my story. I'm like, well, I accept it to a level. So long as they're not changing the core, what you're trying to do, I think they should be allowed to mold the character the way they feel they can give their best out of, you know?
Absolutely, for sure. And especially with this type of story, you, again, have a specific idea, but I think also I like the concept that you allow the actors to feel the role and to produce something for you that you may not necessarily have in mind, but then at the end,
right,
it works out really good. So let's talk about this next project that you're working on. What is your idea and your concept for that one? Because I find that one very interesting as well,
yeah.
But it has what I think the potential to be a really cool concept. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, Hounds of the Western Gulf. That one, that actually came from a very dark place, but thankfully I'm in a good place. So it's now just a cool, it's like, it's just really like this really cool idea I like. Like, I just love the idea of it. So I lost my daughter in November.
Okay.
And, you know, and around that time I was really, and this, I was in Ghana by that, at this point. And, you know, I'd come back from the States in 2016 and been living there for a year, you know, had a daughter, all this. And, you know, she passed away and stuff. And it was just kind of like a big situation for me. And most of it had to do with like finances, you know, that kind of led to that situation. It's because of the fact that I wasn't at the place I needed to be at the time. So when I was sitting there, like, I'm in Ghana and I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, like with my military training, I could take any bank in this country and no one can do anything to me about it because I could do it. And, you know, I was kind of, it was in my head and I was like, yeah, but like, well, the flip side of it is you probably end up in jail, man. And like, you know, and in Ghana, most of the time, you're actually most likely going to get like lynched or something. So those things were kind of in my head and I was like, yo, but that would be a great concept. Cause what if some, you know, kids figure it out? Then, you know, because they're in the States also, when people go robbing and stuff, it's mostly very sophisticated. They don't just get up and go up. Like, because in America, we have surveillance, security, all this stuff, DNA testing. Also, you got to be very smart. But if you are one of those guys and you're like, hey, they don't have any of these things in Africa, but they do have money,
mm-hmm.
you know? So you go down to Africa and this is basically the job, you know, like, because how do you mean you're unstoppable in a way? Because it's like the infrastructure there is way beneath what you're coming with as a sophisticated crew. So I always tell people it's like the town meets City of God.
That's the vibe I got.
But, right. You know? So they kind of like, you know, it's like when they come in, they do their thing and they're kind of becoming like a, you know, popular and becoming an item in the news and stuff like that. And obviously there's always that one guy in every story who is like, not today, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, how that, idea kind of is coming together or came about is because, you know, I was just kind of, there were some personal things I was going through and it was just kind of like a thought that crossed my mind. And I was like, yo, you know, I could use that as a movie. And then I just delved into it and then started kind of meeting the characters one after the other. You know, like when I say meeting as in, you know, as when I write, I feel like certain things start kind of revealing themselves, you know. So as that started happening, I started getting very interested in the story. I was like, wow, this is a very interesting story. And as I was writing it, I couldn't wait to see where it ended because like, I didn't know. I was just following the characters through this roller coaster of and it's going to be one of my biggest thing I've done so far. So. It's actually a pretty big project.
Well, I am definitely excited to hear about it and see more about it and actually watch it. That's very, very wonderful what you do. and the way that you treat your actors and your concepts. I love it. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about your organization that you have put together to help create awareness in the Ghanaian film space? What was your motivation for that? What is that all about particularly?
Right, SAG. SAG is basically our, for me, when I went back home in 2016, I had a big hurdle because before I even left the States, I had financiers and stuff, right? Who had pledged that they were going to help me and all that kind of stuff. So I basically killed everything over here, you know, emptied out my TSP and all that. And, you know, just kind of jumped in, went straight into Africa, man. So when I got over there, it wasn't what I was expecting, because now the funders, the people who were saying they were going to fund the movie were like, we don't know. We're not sure we can do it, But I was in the country already, you know? So I was like, is this what you guys go through all the time? And they were like, yeah, like, you can never get anything off the ground over here. People are going to say they're going to do this, and then they leave you dead in the water most of the time. So I was like, why not? If that's the case, why don't we, the ones who want to make it and who are actually trying to take this thing seriously, why don't we come together and start something small that I feel like eventually could take us and others like us to where we want to go, which is how SAG came about. So me and one of my friends, Nico Majid Michelle, who's like, he's related to one of the biggest actors in Ghana. But even with that, you know, it's all dogma and all that stuff. So he was very interested in working with me too. And before we knew it, we just started having like the crew. And when we started, no one was getting paid. Like, it was just a crew of people who just believed in something, you know? And Northern King was the movie we used to kind of make that statement, because we just had a camera, no mic really. I always tell people we had a mic with an attitude, because like, it would kind of choose whenever it wanted to work. And if it didn't work, then we just kind of winged it, you know, with the camera mic, like raw camera sound like that and stuff like that. But then once we got on Amazon and all these things, it's like, now SAG is looking more, okay, we're now poised to, I'm thinking like within the next 5 to 10 years, that's going to be the name for film. Like, when you come to the Western Hemisphere of Africa, especially with this project we're doing right now. It's a historical one, but no one is actually talking about it. But we're cool with that, because we don't want too much of the hoopla to surround it. We just want it to speak for itself. But it's going to be the biggest film that has been done in the country so far, by a Ghanaian filmmaker. That's the first time a Ghanaian filmmaker was making a film of that size in that country. And also the first time a Ghanaian filmmaker is going to make a film to be released worldwide.
Wow.
So it's like, so it's there's a lot of firsts we're doing in it, but thankfully a lot of people are not aware of this. So, you know, usually when people find out about stuff like that, you start having like too much kind of media coverage of it, and it could be a lot of pressure, you know? So I'm kind of happy that it's rolling under the radar until maybe when the trailer comes out, you know, then they'll be like, yo, that's the first. And yeah, maybe at that point it might pick up.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck with this. I'm very excited to see what comes from you, and I see a bright future for sure. It's exciting.
Oh, I appreciate you, man.
And I feel like that you have this desire and this passion to just really create something beautiful and unique, which I like. And nothing against modern film or anything like that. When you're an independent film director, and I don't even know how I feel about that term necessarily, but when you're just, because what does that really mean? But when you're, let's just say, filmmaker, and you've given so much, and you have this ability to do that and that, and you just make it work, and you create something beautiful. And I think really that is what the heart of film is all about, is telling a story. You know, whether you have a $1 billion budget like Mission Impossible or a shoestring budget, it doesn't matter, because the quality can definitely either be the same or better than a studio motion picture sometimes, which
Indeed, that's fact.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily about what you have, but what you can do with what you've been given. And I feel like that you've been a good steward of that, and you're turning out really great work. So what advice would you give to a young filmmaker who wants to break into this business?
For me, what I'll say is you should first and foremost trust in your work and yourself, because in the beginning, all of us are going to make things that, you know, you're going to make things that you're not entirely proud of and stuff like that. But that should not be an indication of who you are. It's just an indication of where you are, you know. So I think that we shouldn't get discouraged. Filmmaking is one of the kind of, let's say, jobs or career paths where you can get very discouraged very easily, you know. And sometimes one criticism, like one comment on your work, could completely kill all your desire to even want to do films. You know, but you have to trust yourself. And I always tell myself, and I guess today I can tell other people, remember how you felt when you had the idea all the time. Always keep that feeling of that feeling you have. It'll guide you to make it in a way that people will feel the same way when they see it. That's basically, I would say that I should leave it there for them. I don't want to go too long about with the advice.
So if people want to find your film or find out more about you or your organization, how can they do that?
You can always Google Seg Cineland. All our stuff will come up. But with me personally, you can find me on Twitter. I'm pretty active out there on EMJ, and Instagram, same handle. And on that, you can find like my website, and also, you can check all our stuff, our Seg Cineland. We have a channel on Amazon. Also, the only Ghanaian channel, the first and only Ghanaian channel, Ghanaian company to have their own channel on Amazon Prime. So you can find that on Amazon Prime as well. And we have a lot of other stuff, not even directed by me. It's stuff that are from other Seg people. You can check it out and, you know, support the movement.
So I found out about the movie, and I was on Amazon. Nice. Yeah, absolutely. That's how I found out about it and just started looking and watching. And I like independent films and just all kinds of different things in that genre. And so I checked it out, and I was like, I have to talk to this guy because it's just a beautiful story and a beautiful film, and my hat's off to you for it. And thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you too, man.
Well, we have been chatting with Ghanaian film director M. Saibu. He has a film that just released, and it can be found on Amazon. We will also put all of his social contacts and how to get in touch with him in the show notes. We're going to take just a quick break, let you know how you can be a part of the podcast, how you can follow us, and how you can get all of those episodes and all of our social information as well. So we'll just be right back after this. Thank you so much for tuning into today's podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram at Open Mic Podcast, Twitter at Brett Mon, and of course, Facebook, The Open Mic Podcast. And once again, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Goliath Games. Be sure to visit them at www.goliathgames.us. Make it a game day every day. Well, that brings today's episode to a close, your weekend edition of the Open Mic Podcast. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you to M. Saibu for being a part of the show. Until next time, let somebody know that you love them and let them know that you care. Give them a hug and have a good weekend.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.